Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Richard Dunn there. We'll bring you that full Richard Dunn interview around about 9:30 this morning. But Vinnie Perth is with us this morning. Vinnie, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
We may as well pick up off what Richard was saying there, that ultimately, in the Luxembourg game in particular, it was all very predictable. And in fairness, Stephen Kenny identified this. He was saying that in the first half, the distance between the Luxembourg centre-backs and their centre-forwards was never stretched, that we didn't get in behind them at all. That clearly wasn't the game plan. Why did it happen, though?
Because I suppose players didn't do the job properly, whether that's down to coaching or whether that's down to the players. Ultimately, we don't know. But the setup of the team, like I was on the other day and we spoke about the three, whatever you want to call it, 3-5-2, whatever system you want to talk about. And away from home against Serbia, to a point it worked. The three at the back makes you more defensively sound. We have a coach in now from Chelsea who's linked to Tuchel, and I presume part of the thinking has to be, not saying he made the decision, but I presume his coaching experience with that Chelsea first team means that that's part of why we've moved to the three at the back, or at least part of why we, or certain his coaching methods or his, when he's speaking to the players, has to be coming through in the team. But that didn't come out on the pitch. It wasn't good enough. And I think, and obviously from the coaching head on me and all of that stuff, I researched it. Gavin Bazuna's passing the other night, he gave the ball to Kieran Clark 11 times from recess. The next player was Dara O'Shea, which was 4 times. He only gave it to others once or twice. He never went long. So straight away, that's the start of the process. So the ball is going down our left-hand side. So Dara O'Shea's biggest pass, or the amount of times he passed the ball next, was to Enda Stevens. Enda Stevens' next pass, or highest amount of passes, if I'm explaining myself properly here, was to Kieran Clark. And the next in line was Josh Cullen. And Josh Cullen's most passes was to Kieran Clark. So that tells you we created a triangle in our final third, or our defensive third, between Clark, Stevens, and Josh Cullen. And that means we were bogged down on one side, and we were slow and predictable. And I heard Richard's interview, and I think me and him have argued this all weekend long in terms of the rights and the wrongs of systems and everything else. But it's very hard for me to counter-argue him when it's backed up statistically. Like, there was no switches at play and quick switches. Josh Cullen, as their, effectively our number six or our playmaker, never once passed the ball to Matt Doherty, our opposite wing-back, not once in the game. According to the statistics, now watch the match back in case I missed one pass or somebody missed a pass, and I don't see it. So when you get that style of play, then you're in big trouble. You're predictable, you're easy. David Moylan made the point the other day, as a midfielder, I played a midfielder, David obviously played a higher level. If stuff is happening in front of you, it's so much easier to defend against it, so much easier to take a good starting position. And Ireland tactically were really poor in their build-up play, and they were too predictable, too slow, and it was just easy for Luxembourg, and allowed them grow into the game. And then when the key moment came, they were able to take the chance. We were just too predictable. It was really poor.
How do you fix it in the middle of the game? What could we have done kind of at halftime or 60 minutes in?
Well, we didn't get the ball. I would have spoken to Sean many times about number 10s. Number 10, the importance of number 10. Alan Brown, I think, is our best number 10. Anything we've done good, Like, he should have scored in the playoff game. He scored against Serbia. Anything we've done well, I think it's been true, Alan Brown, more or less. Yes, Robbie Brady came on the other day and made a real impact after 1 minute. But beyond that, to be fair, Robbie dropped too deep and he just didn't have the legs. He looks like he's struggling at the moment. But you've got to play through Alan Brown. You've got to play through your number 10. And the difference with this system is that if you play three at the back has been criticised now. And I understand that because the result wasn't good. Most teams, especially possession-based teams, I would have spoke to you about Liverpool playing as a three. Normally they would get, when they're at their best, they'd get the centre midfielder to come in and make a back three. And in possession or starting to play, playing in the three isn't a bad thing. The problem is your fullbacks. Your fullbacks have to be higher up the pitch. And I was trying to think overnight how I can equate that for people to understand. If you remember when Manchester United were knocked out of Champions League to RB Leipzig, you can see the two goals, the first away from home. First goal was scored by Angelino, who is the left wing back for RB Leipzig. The second goal was scored by Hamid, who is the right wing back, from across from the left wing back. If you want to know how to play with three at the back or even three in possession, then watch RB Leipzig. They're just brilliant at it. And our wing backs didn't do enough. They didn't get forward. They didn't get enough crosses in the box. Why I brought up Chelsea is because we have a Chelsea coach in our national setup now. And normally someone like Reece James, when they played Atletico, he crossed the ball 11 times from the right wing back position. Matt Doherty didn't cross the ball 11 times or anything like it. But he only played 45 minutes, albeit. But he wasn't brave enough. He wasn't high enough up the pitch. And our two in midfield of Cullen and Knight, as much as Knight started the game really well in terms of energetic and getting around the place, never gave us a platform. It should have been one in midfield. Cullen bouncing the ball out, as I said, and going out the other side. People talk about tiki-tac football. If you ever watch videos of Pep Guardiola, he'll be on the training ground and it'll be short, 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 and out the other side. And we see with this Manchester City team, they play with the ball with three at the back. And they bring Cancelo into midfield. And it's short, short, and go out the other side and get 1v1s with the wild players. We don't do that. We didn't do that against Luxembourg. And how you fix it? Enda Stevens, if his average position on the ball was deeper against Luxembourg than it was away to Serbia. His performance level dropped off that much that there's no chance. He should have been 10 yards actually higher because he was home and he was playing against Luxembourg. And the two fullbacks hurt us too much, just too much.
On that mention of João Cancelo there, the way he plays for Manchester City, like it was noticeable when Ireland created their one really good opportunity of the game on Saturday night. Enda Stevens cuts in and picks up a midfield position. Why didn't they do that more?
I don't know. It's a brilliant point, and I never know. I remember when it happened, because listen, I've researched Cancelo's position, and sometimes I talk here and I give out different things. If anyone wants to see some of the research on Cancelo, reach out to me. It's there. I have a whole sort of thing in it. But what that does is it also allows you, first of all, to be defensively set up if the ball breaks down. But it makes the opposition think. It makes them think and react. Again, going back to David Moyler's point, all of a sudden, Luxembourg winger has to take a new position after what Stevens done there. And as I said to you, Stevens' most popular pass the other night by a country mile was to Clark. It was backwards. So we kept the ball fine and our passing stats have gone through the roof. But that's where we've become a possession-based team. So the point you make is brilliant. That pass into Enda Stevens, I think it was from Seamus Coleman, found him in the pocket in the midfield, and we go and create something. I just don't know why we didn't do that more. We're at home to Luxembourg. And whether the blame of this, and I said the other day, I'd back Stephen, but when there was criticism, we have to criticize. Whether the blame lies at his door, I don't know. But the players didn't go onto the pitch and do enough, whether it was them or the manager, we don't know unless we're in that group. Just wasn't good enough from our fullbacks.
part of me, and this is a completely intangible thing, Ron O'Gara talks a lot about confidence, and obviously he's kind of seen the transformation of his own team to being a confident team now, and operated in those sports environments where if any of the goals that we've missed from 5 yards or 3 yards or 2 yards have gone in over the last 12 months, the team feels differently about itself. Like if that brilliant move that we've just been speaking about results in a goal, then you suspect that everybody automatically just becomes a better player by moving forward 10 yards and suddenly having the confidence. And
Yeah. So that's where the old guard, and I can take on some of them at different stages, and people say, "Well, who's Vinny? He's never played in the World Cup." I can only speak tactically. Of course I can. But that's where they have a point, right? So if the first goal goes in, or the first chance goes in, it's brilliant play. I think Jason Knight, who started the game really well, and Josh Cullen, for argument's sake, I think their level of performance goes up another notch or two if that goal goes in. Why? It breeds confidence into you. You're a bit more, you're 1-0 up, by the way, and it's a little bit, yeah, we're at it, we can get going, we can play here. The difference is that goal doesn't go in, and there's that sense of pressure around the place. Just, we need a goal. This is Luxembourg. I mean, rightly, but Seamus Coleman's kind of like, we're embarrassed and all of that stuff. Like, this result has hurt the players. So goals change games. They change people's career. They change everything. People forget it come the end of the season. But if you remember Liverpool, the great season they had, the ball bounces off Pickford's crossbar and Divock Origi scores a header from a yard. Meant they win a game, and it gives the momentum to go on and win and help them win a league. I'm not saying if that goal doesn't go in, but momentum stopper that chance was in the 94th minute. That's sport at the highest level. That's why I brought up before that if you think of the Irish rugby team, Eddie Jones is now fighting to keep his job, while the Irish head coach Andy Farrell isn't, because one game swings everything. And now we're down to that stage where tonight's so important for our international manager that the old guard are making about the older players. I think, to be fair, Jeff Hendrick probably over Jason Knight the other night. As much as I want to see the young players coming through, Jeff Hendrick has more experience. He's been there, done that. He's played at a higher level and may have been able to stay more in the moment for longer than what Jason Knight was. And that's the point. And I think Jason Knight is going to be a real star, but he's not there yet, and he hasn't got that international experience or top-end experience yet. And sorry, that's a long-winded way of saying that's why big moments change people's careers, they change games, and they change people's performance. And to be honest with you, I don't think enough is being made of it. I just can't understand why Collins hasn't scored that chance. I know he made decent enough contact and it hits the keeper's legs, but we should be scoring that. It's less than 6 yards out. Side foot, send it back where it came from, side of net, and 1-0 up. And I think everyone relaxes then and we go on and we're much better. So
maybe the reason he didn't score is because he's not really playing a lot of first team football at the moment. He's coming off the bench and his own confidence is low as well. And it's kind of horrible multiplier effect of a bunch of players not fully fit, trying to evolve into a new style of play for the national team with players. In Seamus Coleman's case, he said he was meeting some of them for the very first time because he's been unavailable for various reasons over the last while. So it's a horrible sequence. We're obviously talking micro short term here in terms of the game at the weekend and what happens tonight, and we'll be able to analyse what happens tonight afterwards as well. I did want to just start this conversation now because it's actually a much broader, longer conversation. I think one that we're all going to be having in great detail over the next few weeks. Miguel Delaney tweeted out the piece that he wrote 6 or 7 years ago, which detailed how Irish football had been struggling over the last decade. And bear in mind, so it's 6 or 7 years ago, so that's 17 years ago, to get to grips with the throughput of players and how English football was no longer going to be a release valve for us or a safety valve to bring our best players through. And I just wanted to get your opinion on how we are currently doing at bringing young players through, because it's clear when we look at the age group of the team there's that bunch of young players who have been given game time, who all would have played with Stephen underage, and probably aren't quite ready yet to be the mainstays of a national side. There's one player in his like early to mid-20s, and then everybody else is 29 or older. So there's a whole generation of footballers who haven't come through. Is that over? Like, are we actually okay because those 20-year-olds are coming through? Or is that a bit of a fluke that we've had some 20-year-olds get some first-team experience?
No, it's certainly not a fluke. I mean, what happened at the 21s wasn't all down to Stephen Kenny in terms of those players coming through. There's no doubt about it. But what he did was he skipped a couple of players and he went a little bit younger, and he made a team out of 21s. And his, to be honest, his brilliant management style brought those players through for us. Yes, it seems too early, or in Troy Parrott's case, for obvious reasons, the injuries and club form, it's too early because he hasn't played enough games. But like, we have this amnesia, I think, that the last 4.5 years didn't happen. It did. I mean, the only argument I can make is people stopped going to the Aviva Stadium. If I was running a local team and I needed 25 tickets, I could have got them for free and brought all the players with me, no problem. I mean, people stopped going under Martin O'Neill, under Mick McCarthy, because it wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough on the eye. Now, remember, I'm making that comment, and we've just lost to Luxembourg, so I'm not defending anybody. What happened the other night is just not acceptable, and there has to be now a real reaction to it. I said there has to be progress throughout Stephen's campaign. It isn't just good enough to bring players through, get them experience, and the form and the team not be good enough and no progress. So we have to see real progress between now and the end of the campaign if Stephen has to continue in the job. I accept that, and he always did. I think that was fair. But on the wider point, like, just one example is, do people, and this is why I have a problem with people sitting in Sky Sports studio who can make comments about Irish football, whether it's Cascarino or whoever else, not personally criticising them, but the difference where that and where I get criticised, Vinnie Hill, Shahuizi, all of that stuff. Like, I stood on the cop watching Jack's last match. I was there when McIntyre scored. I sang the Fields of Athenry in Poznan as well, right? But I also completely and utterly understand how Gavin Bazuna became an Irish international, right? Shamrock Rovers made a massive investment, first of all in their youth academy, second of all in the training facilities. They sent that kid to school to help him in a leaving cert. They sent him to school in Ashfield College and allowed him to train full time. They then sold that player for $500,000 to Manchester City, and then he was gone on loan, and he was quite, and they put him into his first team to allow that sale to go through, or to give him that platform for that sale to go through. And now he's played first team football for Ireland and made a success of it. What Shamrock Rovers did has to be replicated by everybody else. It's not. Kevin's are doing a brilliant job, and it's up to Bowes to take them players, and they do to a certain point. But the investment Shamrock Rovers made, and that only happened, by the way, in the last 18 months, 2 years. So the fixes are there. But you've got to support these clubs. You've got to support them. I live in Tala all my life. What we do is we give St. Grahar $250,000 to finish their AstroTurf. We give St. Mark's $175,000. We give 5, 6, 7, 10 clubs a couple of hundred grand here, and the local council gets their votes or the TDs and all that stuff. And we end up spending 3-4 million, all these different clubs who have just average facilities. Instead of getting together and building one super facility in the middle of Tala with 4 or 5 AstroTurf pitches, 3 or 4 grass, whatever, and say, right, here we go. He's all playing that one area. And no, we don't. We just chicken feed and spread the money out here, there and everywhere. And if you want an example of how it's done, go to Shamrock Rovers, see what they've done with their goalkeeper, see how they got him into the first team, and see the results of it there the other night against Luxembourg. Yes, it won't always be that easy, but the plan is there. You just need some money. Need backing, and Rovers need to be pushed and say, you can't do that in a one-off. We want to see more for the money we invest in you. But that's the only club anywhere near the facilities capable of doing it. And even that, their facilities are just one astro turf and one grass pitch in a rented facility up in Rhodeston, which is brilliant, but it's still not anywhere near the level that we're trying to compete with other nations. It's just nowhere near.
That is the problem. Like the other nations have sat back and strategically thought about this over a long period of time. We've seen the progress that Iceland have made, and Iceland has half the population that Luxembourg have made. And now Luxembourg have decided that they were going to invest in their local facilities and keep players until they were 17 or 18 and then send them off to other leagues around Europe. And lo and behold, they have a guy who plays in the Champions League, and that guy scores in a game against us, and we don't have anybody playing in the Champions League at the moment. In terms of where we are with the relationship between the FAI and the youth system and the role of Rude Doctor, and again, I realise that like this is a proper hour-long conversation. We don't have a full hour this morning to talk about it, but is that relationship between, say, him and Shamrock Rovers and Kevin's and Bo's, is that clear? Do we have a... Does the pyramid at least look like a pyramid now?
It does. Whether it's all correct and right, we don't know. I mean, what we did in Ireland was we said to the likes of Cherry Orchard, who developed hundreds of League of Ireland or hundreds of players capable of playing in England and a hell of a lot of Irish internationals, someone like Cherry Orchard, we said to them, listen, great job, lads. Thanks very much. Good luck to you. We don't need you anymore. We're going to get St. Pat's to do it in your area. Or we said the same to Crumlin United, who developed Robbie Keane. So if they're good enough to develop Robbie Keane or Irish internationals at Cherry Orchard, they're not good enough anymore, and we've just got rid of them. We didn't marry them into clubs. And Kevin's, to be fair to them, stood their ground and didn't go away and ended up linking with Bowles. Part of that, some people in Bowles would counter-argument, but part of that was because Bowles didn't have a setup capable of, or a youth setup, so it made sense. But we've just left clubs like Cherry Orchard and said, oh, grand. So 40 years of experience of developing young players and internationals is just gone. Thanks very much. Crumlin United, gone. And the schoolboy setup then has been decimated as a result of it. The DDSL has behaved disgracefully as well. But at the same time, the whole league has been ripped apart. Anyone that's played football at any sort of decent level has come through players or anyone surrounded through the DDSL. All Ireland champions generally were based out of DDSL. That whole thing has been ripped apart. And I don't think Rude is engaged with them clubs well enough and people within the FAI. And they've left them. It should have been forced for the likes of Cherry Orchard to have to link up with a League of Ireland club. League of Ireland clubs, we're doing better now. They're genuinely doing better. But they aren't good enough yet, all of them, to run the whole academy all the way through. We see the money it costs at Shamrock Rovers to do it. And they should have been forced to link up with them. Home Farm has just been, Belvedere, they've just been left behind. Yeah, Shelbourne then, over that part of the city in Dublin, go on and create a whole schoolboy setup from under nines all the way up, which takes years and years to develop. And you've got Home Farm and Belvedere within their door. And they weren't forced to marry up together. That makes no sense to me. I'm not being critical of anyone in Shelbourne or Home Farm, but the FAI should have had a long-term view of this and kept these clubs on board and the expertise that they have. Like Richard Dunn was developed at Home Farm. Troy Pard was developed at Belvedere. And we've just thrown them aside. So And by the way, Rude Doctor has to create elitism. We have to have these national leagues, the under 15s, 17s, 19s. They're the way forward. But we've just taken out people who have been doing the job for 40, 50 years and just got rid of them and made clubs restart again. And to be fair, to Bowles and Rovers, they're the only two clubs, I would say, doing it right. And not to say the likes of Sligo are bringing through John Kenny, through their on the right side. There is things happening in pockets around the country, but there's no joint up thinking. And I think the engagement that Rude schoolboy clubs football would say is non-existent. That's what they tell me. I wasn't at that cold face long enough to know what's the truth, but the likes of Cherry Orchard would tell you they've just been dismissed. They even tried recently, this whole Dublin County tried to get into the League of Ireland First Division. Cherry Orchard were willing to provide them with the schoolboy setup for their club, which meant under 13, 15, 17 National League, we had another 20 to 25 players playing at that elite level. And we made the decision that Dublin County, for whatever reason, rightly or wrongly, weren't going to do it. So we have a real problem, and there's so much infighting. I don't see it being fixed anytime soon, and that's the concern. And we're being left behind by Luxembourg and Iceland and all of these nations that are way ahead of us.
Yeah, no, look, and I think this is an important conversation, and I know that we weren't going to get into too much of the nitty-gritty, but they're all very interesting points. And I know that when we put this out later, we will get contact from the people involved in those clubs and the people involved in the League of Ireland clubs. So the conversation at least has begun. And if anybody wants to get involved in that, the hashtag is OTBAM. Did you want to ask one last question?
I guess back to the national team, Vinny, when it comes to Stephen Kenny's immediate future, like Roy Barrett's come out and said that they're going to keep him until the end of the campaign, that there's no immediate danger to his role. Does a defeat tonight change that at all? Does it put him in any bit of jeopardy, do you think?
Well, yes, it does, because it's a result business. He will know that. Do I think if he's sacked or if he loses, he should be sacked? No, I don't think so. I think he should finish the campaign, but I think it puts him under massive pressure. Again, watching finding that about Jack Charlton, we live in a world now where I looked up the whole thing around Paul McGrath sitting on the bus. Imagine that happened now. Jesus. I couldn't. I'd fear for what would have happened and the whole reaction to it. It's going to be a massive reaction to tonight's result. He's in a no-win situation. If he wins 2-0 tonight, people will go, see, he should have won anyway. And if he loses 2-0, they'll call for his head. No-win situation. The FAI had no choice but to back him. I think, for me, we've got to take a long-term view. Whether Stephen's the right man or not, that's up for other people to decide. But unless we take a long-term view of 2, 4, 6 years with a manager and let him build his team, well, then we're going nowhere, and we're going nowhere fast. So it's a difficult one to answer. Mm. Personally, I don't wish any bad on him. I hope he survives this, but he's got to win football matches there. That's the key to it all.
Finney, always brilliant. Good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thank you.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Okay, Stephen Doyle and Nathan Murphy are with us. Lads, good morning to you. I'm going to just read some, not quick emails, but an email and some DMs. I don't know what you youth get in your DMs these days, Owen, but...
not this filth.
This is what I've been getting. I take no pleasure in seeing the team I have supported and followed for 29 years humiliated and out after 2 matches. The lie that we can forget the present in favour of a better future is not something my 70-plus dad has time for. After all the matches we've been to, we don't know how many World Cups we'll go to. So I take no pleasure in this result. My mail is to complain about your editorial content. Over the past months, I've listened to your show, and the concerns of myself and my dad about the blind philosophy have not been represented by any contributor, as the received wisdom is that Mick McCarthy and Martin O'Neill didn't know what they were doing. These two guys were human like us, but brought us some of our greatest memories in the roller coaster that comes with following a small country. Why was Moore not made of McGoldrick retiring? Again, my complaint is with your content not representing my opinion and not the team. As a loyal fan for 30 years, I've come to accept that Irish managers don't always have world-beating talent available, but every other manager gave me and my dad some exciting, sometimes disappointing days out in Lansdowne. If your football analyst followed David Moyes' time at Man United, they would have seen that a long-term plan can only be delivered with decent results and keeping the team motivated. Mick McCarthy's results at Cardiff again demonstrate he can get decent results from limited resources. He was indeed given a hospital pass when he was fired on the same day he was hired. That's one. And then the other one is an email. I've just been listening to this morning's OTBAM podcast. My God, do some of you guys like the sound of your own voices. Just out of interest, do you make the lads listen back to themselves? If not, I would recommend it be made mandatory. That's you, Owen. They described a battle for the soul of Irish football between people wanting to shut up shop and defend and hope Shane Duffy can score, or those who feel that a proper analysis of how we got to this scenario is done now. A reckoning. I'm all for analysis, so let's do some. Name the best schoolboy clubs in the country. Clubs that produce heroes of the past. Crumlin United, Home Farm, Cherry Orchard, Leicester Celtic, Lords Celtic, St. Kevin's Boys, Tralee Dynamos, Talca Rovers, Belvedere. We had a schoolboy nursery, the envy of the world, which has been dismantled for money and handed over to the League of Ireland to run into the ground. In 93, a Cherry Orchard team I was a member of played in the Mill Cup. We played Liverpool and we got beaten 1-0. Man United and Paul Scholes progressed to win the tournament. 2 years later, a Cherry Orchard team returned to the Mill Cup and won the competition outright. Our league was the envy of the world. Boys in the UK played for their schools, not clubs. The underinvestment was in the clubs. Successful clubs built allegiances with English clubs and invested the reward of players signing for those clubs back into the grassroots. What's the current plan? Where do the volunteers that gave you Roy Keane, Robbie Keane and Damien Duff fit in? There was no League of Ireland staff involved in their development. What about late bloomers that are not picked up by the current system? Mick didn't qualify from the last campaign. Completely inaccurate. We were in a playoff that Stephen Kenny's Ireland lost. We got into the playoff through the Nations League seedings and we got into a playoff not because of the quality of the football that Mick produced. But anyway, people want to go back to the Mick McCarthy days, put him under pressure. Go on, Big Jack. People forget Ireland came frighteningly close to a Saturday situation. Close is a lingerie shop. I had to look that up. Do you get the reference?
I'd never heard it before.
It's from Lethal Weapon 2 or Lethal Weapon 3. Close is a lingerie shop with no window, she says in it. I don't get it.
Right, that's I didn't know it was a Lethal Weapon reference.
What people wanted
to tell you some of those fans that were in France gathering outside there.
That was Copenhagen.
What people wanted to do, anyway, won't embarrass us much like they did on Saturday night. Like everything in Irish society, we want to put the cart before the horse. If we don't have the player to play possession football, why try? A good manager plays to his team's strengths, not his principles. Principles are like pride. And then this, is there much more of this? Let Kenny and his principles go to work at the grassroots level. Start your rebuilding there. Stop destroying the schoolboy league to provide money for the League of Ireland and go from there. Players that can't play shouldn't be asked to play. Why are we doing it at Crystal Palace and Frank de Boer on it? In the past, particularly, we had players that could play, Brady, Giles, etc., but could not qualify for major tournaments. Much like with the Dublin footballers, success breeds participation and interest. And there is loads more of that. Enjoy the show. When you don't talk bollocks, it finishes. So...
That Milk Cup, Vinnie Perth scored the winner in that Milk Cup against Glasgow Rangers. He's just been in touch as well. So there you go. Everything's knitting together here this morning quite well.
In the 94 one?
Yeah, I think so.
Right, okay. Kids don't care about style of play. People like you do. They care about winning. No child ran onto the green to reenact Saturday night. That just got deleted on me again there. So, anyway, that's where we are. Nathan, should we be Burnley?
Yes. No, I don't think so. One of the reasons why we shouldn't be is that there's no relegation where we're living right now. So Burnley play like that because they have very limited resources and they want to stay in the Premier League. That is their first priority. We need to win games. So we will not qualify for major tournaments by drawing our way through, by hanging on. We need to go and win games. It's why Ireland qualified for major tournaments in the past. So I don't think anybody wants to see the Republic of Ireland playing like Burnley, and there's no guarantees there'll be success. I think it's brilliant that there's so many passionate people out there for Irish football. I think you see within those that there's even some disagreement as to how Irish football should go next around underage level, around League of Ireland clubs. But we have to start playing a modern brand of football. It has to be effective.
Why?
It can't be what it was.
Tell me why.
It can't be what it was.
We've got to bring people with us here. So, and I've got to represent the views of some of the people who've been in touch with us. So I don't necessarily agree with all the questions I'm going to ask you, but I need to make sure that you guys have thought this through. And why do we need, like, what is actually stopping us from drawing our way into the playoffs and then trying to win one of those games? Win your home games, draw your way into the playoffs, do a Burnley on it, be difficult to beat, win some games 1-0 through a set piece and get into playoffs.
Well, when did Ireland win their home games to qualify? Aside from that one night with Shane Long when they absolutely stunned Germany. So that's what you're reliant on. That is totally what you're reliant on. Saturday night was a low point because it's been coming, because Irish football over the last 3-4 years has had this coming. Think about the results that have happened over the last 3-4 years. They have been played off the park by Denmark, by Wales, by Switzerland. Big defeats against all those countries. Matches that 10, 15 years ago against Georgia that Ireland would grind out, it'd be tough, but we'd have enough quality to just about get it done. That doesn't happen anymore. Now, we're dropping points in those games. And as we saw in the last campaign against Gibraltar, against the weakest teams, Ireland can't rip them apart anymore. So that sitting back defensive style of football that it seems people now seem to feel was a guaranteed success under Mick McCarthy and Martin O'Neill. Let's not forget, Ireland didn't qualify for Euro 2020, didn't come in the top two in their group. You're right. That playoff was earned through world rankings, through Nations League. We could have lost every game in the last campaign and still got a playoff. Ireland didn't qualify for the World Cup before that. So we can't go back to just defensive football and relying on Shane Duffy because it wasn't working. And I don't agree that players can't play an attractive style of football, that it's somehow in our DNA that, oh, lump it up the field. If these players are at clubs who play attractive football, they can do it at international level. Now, unfortunately, at the moment, not a lot of them are at those clubs. But I think we saw glimmers in Serbia. We saw in that move for that one-off move for the James Collins opportunity that they can at times play possession football. But this, let's go back. There was no success over the last 4 years. There was no sitting back, over the last being 4 years, defensive, working.
Martin O'Neill's team was successful. They got out of a group at the Euros.
They did. Martin O'Neill's team had a far better quality of players, unfortunately, than this one. And if there's one big mistake that Stephen Kenny made, it's maybe talking about the quality of players that were coming through, and it frustrated the life out of him all the time, this, we don't have the players.
On a point of information, though, Martin O'Neill's team in Lille that night had James McCarthy, it had Daryl Murphy, it had James McLean, it had Robbie Brady and Jeff Hendrick. Brady and Hendrick could have started the game at the weekend, and they didn't. McCarthy is injured. McLean came off the bench. Daryl Murphy, is he significantly better than any of the players who played for us? The difference between the team in Lille and the team the other night isn't a quantum leap, is it?
Yeah, but Italy didn't play their strongest team that night. I think people sometimes forget that.
Sure, but we qualified from the group. That was the team that qualified from the group.
But those players were at a different stage of their career than these current players are. So that class of 92 of Hendrick, Brady, even in this current side, Duffy, Doherty, Egan, they were all 24, 25. They were playing some of the best football of their career. Irish football has fallen off a cliff since then. Nobody has come through over the last 4 or 5 years. Alan Brown was the only player born between 1993 and 1998 who played the last night. Now, it may not seem that startling. The only homegrown player. That's 6 seasons of underage football. That's 6 seasons of under 15 representative national teams, under 16 representative national teams, which, as far as I know, Alan Brown didn't even play for. So that's 6 years of them that didn't produce a single player ready for the international setup. And they're the players right now who are between, say, 23 and 28, who should be at the peak of their career. And we don't have them. We don't have any of them. With the exception of Alan Brown, he was the only one who was out there. So there is this lost generation of players who should be at their peak right now who aren't there. Hendrick, Brady, those players are still around, but they're 29, 30, and as we head to the next few years, we'll be 32 by the time Euro 24 comes around. And then the next generation coming through, well, there's no guarantees. This was, while I know we'd be accused of maybe not buying, selling the Kool-Aid when it came to Stephen Kenny, the one thing I was always wary of was how good this next generation were going to be, because unfortunately, with the way Irish football is set up, it is out of Stephen Kenny's hands. Could you sit here hand on heart now and say in 3 years' time, that Jason Malumbi, Gavin Bazunu, Cuivin Kelleher, Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrott will be playing first team Premier League football? I don't think they can. So I think there is unquestionably, and that's why Saturday night was a low from a different set of circumstances, say, to the Cyprus defeat, which was, you know, bad management, humiliating defeat with a lot of quality players. This was a low because it was felt like a new normal, as I saw quoted yesterday, that this is what Irish football is. The players to bring us to another level just aren't there. But I don't think that's the style of football. I think those players can play an attractive style of football. I don't think those players who played on Saturday night are going to be any better sitting back and being ultra defensive and hoping for the best.
Stephen, what do you think about the context of the Luxembourg game in isolation? How big an underachievement was that for this group of Irish players?
I watched the game back last night, and while I would be supportive of Stephen Kenny and his approach to international management, I do think he needs time. I think he made mistakes on Saturday night. I watched the match back and I'm kind of thinking, well, even when I'm watching the match live, I'm kind of thinking, why is there so many gaps? Why is there so many big spaces in this Irish team? And I think the formation of 3-5-2 worked against Serbia because it almost reflected what Serbia were doing. Also, we kind of caught Serbia on the hop. They weren't expecting that. Like, they'd seen Ireland playing usually with a back four And I don't think they expect what they got last Thursday night. So that worked for a while, but then eventually they kind of figured that out within the game and eventually got the victory. But we played a 3-5-2, and I was watching. There were so many times where Jason Knight and Josh Cullen were 30, 40, 50 yards away from our forward line. And the thing about football is you have to be, and especially when you play a formation like 3-5-2, you have to be compact. The whole team has to move like a unit. But they weren't moving like a unit. Now, it's not entirely Stephen Kenny's fault either, because he has so limited, he's got limited time to work with these players in these formations and get them working right. But I do think that he should have figured out within the game that this wasn't working. And what was happening was Luxembourg didn't close us down until we got close to the halfway line or onto the halfway line. That's when the Luxembourg players closed us down. So they stayed close to each other. They stayed compact. They wait till we got to the halfway line. And then three times in the first 10 minutes, they took the ball. Sorry, within the first 3 minutes, three times they nicked the ball off us from pressing us around the halfway line and got breaks. And fortunately, Ireland were able to keep goals out. But they were conserving energy. And as well, you have to remember is that Luxembourg played Qatar in a friendly on Thursday night. They only used five of their starters from the friendly in the match on Saturday night. So they had a lot of six fresh players going into that game. Whereas we were pressing Luxembourg and we were using Robinson, we were using Collins and using Brown to press Luxembourg up into their own box, pressing the goalkeeper. And it was pointless because they were able to just dink the ball over the three forwards. And all of a sudden the lads then had to run back and they were just wasting energy. And there was so much energy wasted in that Irish team in the first half of the game. And it just killed us. Like by the end of the game, you could see those players were fading. And I think that was a mistake of Stephen Kenny. I think he should have figured that out within the game, that they were able to beat that press and to get us on the back foot. And that our forwards then were just wasting energy. And I think as well that we needed Alan Brown, although he is good in that attacking midfield role, I think we needed him beside either Jason Knight or Josh Cullen. I think playing two young players in that kind of important role in the engine room in a game like that was a mistake. I think we needed Robbie Brady on the pitch. Like, I wouldn't have had Robbie Brady starting against Serbia, but I thought we needed him against Luxembourg. There was just too many inexperienced players in that team starting on Saturday night. And look, everybody, the off-the-ball office knows, I've been banging on about this Luxembourg team for years. They have been an emerging nation over long periods of time. Rodriguez, who scored the goal on Saturday night, he hit the post against France in that 0-0 draw in Paris. I watched that game live. They played a fantastic game. And if you look at that French team, I tweeted that French team out last night. It was a bloody good French team. Mbappe, Giroud were playing. Conte was playing. They had Koscielny and Umtiti playing at centre half. A really, really good French team who went on to win the World Cup. And they drew 0-0 with Luxembourg. So we're not talking about, you know, some sort of a, like, I know they're ranked around 98 or something like that. This isn't a bad team. Like, they're a really good team. They came within a whisker of being promoted into Nations League B. It was only for a red card in the deciding match against Cyprus after 30 minutes that really killed them. So it was a good side. And I know Stephen Kenny definitely knew they were a good side, but I just think he approached the game the wrong way. And I think he started the wrong team. He started the wrong formation. I just don't know why. Like, I understand the back three worked against Serbia and we got some joy out of it. But I think he needed to be a bit more pragmatic and go with a back four, go back to the old 4-2-3-1 that served him well, because I think we would have been a bit more compact and to be not pressing as high up the pitch where we really killed ourselves. It was frustrating to watch. It really was. And it was disappointing because I do want to see Stephen Kenny doing well, but I definitely think he made mistakes on Saturday night.
It's interesting, Aidan, that you talk about this being the new normal or a realisation that this is the new normal. And there's something in that. Like, you make the comparison with Burnley there. And like, I'd go one step further on that sort of comparison, a comparison with a lower Premier League team here. Fair enough if you don't want to persist with a manager if you're a lower Premier League team, because if things get worse before they get better, you might end up getting relegated. For Ireland, if things get worse before they get better, who cares? Because the normal wasn't actually that impressive anyway. It's not like we were getting to every tournament anyway. That if there is a guarantee of better days to come, I think people will bite your hand off for things to get worse before they get better. The question is, though, is it short-term pains?
And well, there is no guarantee.
Yeah,
there is no guarantee. That is the issue with football in general. I'm not one for long-term planning at senior level. I think there's a huge debate that will happen, needs to happen around underage football. But even the term, we're in a transition period, well, that implies that there's going to be an end to it. Whereas there are no guarantees. The players I just ran through, a year ago, we looked at Jason Malumbi on loan at Millwall and thought, oh, he's having a flying season in the Championship. Graham Potter is going to bring him back, integrate him into Brighton team in the Premier League. He's going to play regular football. That didn't happen. Rarely got an opportunity in the Premier League. Now he's on the bench at Preston. We hope he can turn it around and he still has an opportunity. But that can happen very quickly for an awful lot of players at that age. So as much promise as they're in that group, there's no guarantees that at club level it's going to happen for them. But you're right. So, yes, there have been good moments over the last few years and Ireland needs to qualify for tournaments. It's pretty straightforward for me. For an Ireland manager, getting to a World Cup is a bonus. You have to qualify for a European Championship. So if Stephen Kenny does get another term, I think he will have to qualify for the European Championship or it'll be seen as a failure. And Stephen's right. It was a bad, bad night for Stephen Kenny on Saturday night. It became shambolic in the second half and the substitutions did absolutely nothing. I would agree on the team selection. But something he pointed out is that he felt they needed a bit of continuity because they've no time on the training pitch. And that's, unfortunately, for Stephen Kenny, maybe the mark of this campaign. It was a COVID campaign with, you know, you're wondering what the crowd would have been like on Saturday night. Well, I was there. There was no crowd. It didn't feel like a proper international. None of these have felt like proper internationals. There is no atmosphere. There's no, when the anthem plays, there isn't even that roar at the end where maybe the heart rate starts to rise ever so slightly. And I know you can flip that and say, well, for young players, maybe it's great that there's nobody there on their back on a night like this. But this is international football. You want your family, you want the crowd there behind you, feeling the support. So it hasn't been a normal campaign. They haven't helped themselves. And 10 games without a win and losing to Luxembourg, it's going to be a mountain to climb for any manager. But Ireland can go back. So if and when the Stephen Kenny reign comes to an end, they can go to a Chris Hughton and go to somebody who's very experienced at all levels of the game, who's been involved with the international side before, who plays very defensive football and still does. And I was watching Nottingham Forest in the Championship about a month ago, and at halftime, the pundits were exasperated as to how negative Nottingham Forest were and couldn't understand that for a team who were maybe hoping to get into the playoffs, that this was the style of play they were going with. But obviously, it has worked for Chris Hughton in the past. And listen, maybe Brighton is the prime example
maybe
of the great debate
wants.
That's going in.
Maybe that's what Ireland football fans want.
Maybe it is.
No, it's like... We all remember going to those matches when Trapattoni was in charge, when Martin O'Neill was in charge, and they were pragmatic and they were negative, and people were giving out. They weren't happy. You know, like we were, you know, I know they qualified us for a couple of tournaments, but I said, like, yeah, we all know that it's mad. If you can't qualify for Euros, you're a really poor manager. Like the World Cup is, like, we've got 57 European nations looking for 13 qualification spots at the World Cup. Like, that's... It's bananas. And actually, I wanted to go back just some, because I know one of our emailers mentioned there was 2 points there, Mick McCarthy and David McGoldrick. Listen, David McGoldrick, his career was nearly over a couple of seasons ago. He had to go on a trial. He had to take a trial at, what was he, 29, I think, Nathan? He had to go for a trial with Sheffield United, which he managed to get into the first team then after that trial. And then he managed to get into the Premier League. And this guy is trying to carve out a career for himself very late on. Like, he had to try and make as much money as he can in the latter years of his career. So to you know, put that at risk by going and playing international football at his age, it's just, I can totally understand Dave McGoldrick's reason. It seems to be this thinking out there, people think that Dave McGoldrick was hacked off for what was going on with Stephen Kenny, which is just nonsense. The guy, his career was nearly over. He gets this chance at Sheffield United. He gets into the Premier League. You know, he's trying to elongate his career and make as much money as he can and to make a future for himself and his family, and that's fair enough. In regards to Mick McCarthy at Cardiff, it's brilliant, and I think it's great to see Mick McCarthy doing well again. But the thing is, Mick McCarthy is with these players week in, week out. He's with them 3, 4, 5 days a week. You know, Stephen Kenny's got these players for 2 days in each before each match. There's no comparison there, you know.
But the argument against that, Stephen, I guess, will be that if that's the case and Stephen Kenny hasn't had time, as unfortunate as it is, that should you go with a simpler game plan? Is he expecting too much from a group of players when he has no time to get his philosophy across and actually lads, look at what you did under Mick McCarthy and Martin O'Neill, because, and if we get a bit of time in a couple of years and the vaccine comes in, then we'll try and do what I want to do.
I don't think it's going to work in the group we're in. Like, we're playing against a Portugal team that have like three top quality players for each position. We're playing against a Serbia side who have some really, really good players. And I think even playing that pragmatic, like, I do think we should have been a little bit more pragmatic against Luxembourg. I'm not saying that Stephen Kenny should be, you know, throwing his philosophy out the window. I think he could have gone with 4-2-3-1 formation, which he has played with the under-21s and with the senior team and got results out of. I think he should have gone with that the other night. I think what happened was he went for that 3-5-2 system. It wasn't executed correctly. I think the players have to take some part of the blame on that as well.
I think, Jared, I was going to say, when you're on about the last, like, listen, it feels as though, because of what's happened in the last year previous to that, feels like a long time ago. Mick McCarthy's time in the World Cup campaign didn't go well. Ireland struggled past Gibraltar, couldn't score goals, and it fell apart over the last few months. Martin O'Neill had some great days, and we were in Lille, and you want nights like that. But you couldn't give away a ticket for an Ireland match for the last 4 or 5 years. For a playoff, when Germany came to town, people wanted to go. You literally could not give away a ticket. We would get tickets into the office and you'd send around a mail, does anybody want to go to the match? And nobody would take them because nobody wanted to see this Irish team and the style of football that was there. The generations of Irish supporters who were in their 70s and their 60s and their 50s, who grew up watching great players and then went along with the Italian 90 success, who bought the season tickets, who went to every match for 20, 30 years, stopped going because they were like, this is not like football I watched on television. Everybody watches a lot of football, whether it's Nations League, Europa League, or every Premier League game. So they know what is equality. And this, even going back to Burnley, we've been to Turf Moor a lot. I've seen Burnley. Burnley don't play the way the Republic of Ireland do. Yeah, at times it's a bit Route 1. They've got two big men up front. But Jeff Hendrick used to play a lot better for Burnley than he did for the Republic of Ireland. He would get a lot more touches, keep it on the ground a lot more. So it wasn't all just Route 1. So people started watching Ireland actually, I don't want to spend the money on this.
That's getting back to let's play what Burnley do actually as opposed to just Route 1. Like, Route 1 is Wimbledon. Route 1 is, you know, what Ireland were characterised under Jack Charlton, but actually we were a bit more sophisticated because we had the midfield that could play it. So it was press forward, win the ball back, and then when we had it in their half, let's keep it but try to score. I mean, also, loads of the games were terrible in the back pass rule. All a completely different time. But there is still an argument for being pragmatic, and that's the argument that I think that the emailer earlier on, I didn't give his name, Fergus Weldrick. So thanks for the email, Fergus, because it was really good.
Well, it has to be effective. It has to be effective. And John Giles said that on Thursday. It was the word he kept going back to. Whatever style of play you go with, it has to be effective. And one of the worst things about the Jack Charlton era is people now look at put him under pressure as something to almost use against them. Every great team puts teams under pressure. Mm-hmm. Liverpool and Manchester City. What's the big difference from Liverpool this year is they don't put teams under pressure. So whatever Irish team plays has to have a lot of energy when you don't have the ball. You've got to win it back in good positions. You've got to turn over. And then when you get it, you can do something different.
Yeah, 100%, right? And I think that, like, that's why when there was a bit of a press, certainly in the Serbia game, you're like, oh, this is good. We like, in those first 20 minutes when the energy levels were high. And I think that if the press had been effective against Luxembourg, if the midfield had played a bit further forward, if the fullbacks had played a bit further forward, really good information from Vinnie Perth earlier on that their average position was deeper at home against Luxembourg than it was away against Serbia, which clearly shows that some level of communication has broken down. Players aren't doing what they're supposed to do and the management haven't been able to impact that during the game. Like, the king of the pragmatism, the job that is going to, the name is going to be linked with the job most over the next while because of the available candidate. I don't think people are going to link Chris Hughton with the gig while he has a job. If the FAI want a quick fix here, Stephen, it's going to be Neil Lennon. Like, that's the level of candidate that we're at the moment. You want somebody who plays the system to beat Luxembourg. I would back Neil Lennon to beat Luxembourg. I'm not sure that Neil Lennon is the right man for the long term for the Republic of Ireland job. I don't know what it says to the Irish football ecosystem, but does the FAI just think, well, I need to qualify for tournaments, lads? That's where all the money comes from.
Neil Lennon has just left the biggest club in Glasgow, where he had the chance to make history, win a 10 in a row. He had all the money in the world to throw at it. The Celtic board, which they never do, opened the purse strings. gave him what he wanted, and he blew it. He absolutely blew it from a position of incredible strength, where it looked like Rangers were never going to catch up with Celtic ever again, and he's absolutely blown it. No chance he should be getting the Ireland job. No chance. And, you know, like, this is one bad result. You know, we had a decent enough performance against Serbia. We didn't get the result that we wanted. We had a bad result against Luxembourg.
It's 10 bad results,
I think,
though.
We need to...
Mm. It's 10 bad results. But, like, you know, and I know some of them are friendlies and we shouldn't really count them too much, but we, you know.
But again, listen, lads, we're in the, like, and I hate trying to make excuse for Kenny all the time, but this is real. We're in the middle of a pandemic. This is not like any other manager has faced before, and nobody other manager has faced this kind of an issue that Stephen Kenny is facing. He made 10 changes to the last competitive team against Bulgaria between that match and the Serbia game. This is not, no, he's, no other Irish managers have to deal with the hand of cards, the cards that Kenny has been dealt with. Like, it's, this is, like, we have to stick with him. You know, he has to be, I think Kevin Kilbane was right. He has to be given two campaigns, and then we'll see after that. You know, but I think the bigger issue as well, which Vinny touched on with you guys there, is, and, you know, Nathan's making, alluding to the fact that we've had this big, massive gap in producing players for, or not producing players for so many years. We need to go back to the start and start looking at how we bring through players. That landscape has changed as well. We're not going to be sending over lads like we did to the UK and letting the Premier League clubs or Championship clubs to bring our lads through. The landscape has changed. We need to get people to, like, Rude Doctor came in and, you know, I can see he's trying to do good work there. And, but, like, we needed somebody like a Brian Kerr. I've seen Dave Henderson, former Pats goalkeeper, won a league title under Brian Kerr, suggesting that Kerr comes in on Twitter there about doing kind of a director of football job. Someone like Brian Kerr to come in, who, you know, would have had experience of schoolboy clubs. He knows the lay of the land regards to schoolboy clubs all around the country. He also knows about the League of Ireland. He thinks that it was a mistake to just hand it all over to the League of Ireland, the development of players. So why can't we get somebody in like him, who understands schoolboy football, who understands
I remember reading a brilliant piece about Australian rugby having a messiah complex. Like, Brian Kerr is not going to fix Irish football on his own. And while I understand the principle behind it is to get good people involved, I get that. But, like, we made the decision. Like, I'm completely out of time in this now. And we've just opened up the whole, how should we fix the relationship between
Well, they're two different debates, Jerry. You're right. They're two totally different debates, because you're right, it'd be great to have a role for Brian Kerr. And that period where I'm talking about no players coming through, that was the Vin Coopermans era. Pretty much those 6 years that Vin Coopermans was in charge of Irish football, not a single player was developed, which I'm sure he doesn't put on his CV. Things have improved in some way under Rude Doctor, though I know there are huge controversies at schoolboy level as to whether it's the right route to go down. But again, to put that in context, that is 14-year-olds for 6 years in a row, the best player in the country, didn't go on and play for his country at senior level. Like, that can't be allowed to happen again. And it'd be great to get Brian Kerr and get all that knowledge base. And listen, we hear them every week in this show, the passion and the intelligence there is around the Irish football community. Now that there's a change of guard at the top, you would hope that they would be embraced. But none of them are going to be any help right now to Stephen Kenny over the next 18 months or 2 years.
No. Out of 10, how certain are you that Stephen Kenny is going to be the manager in January 2022? And I need an out of 10 answer here. Nathan?
7.
Stephen?
I'd say 9. They can't afford to get another manager in.
Okay. All right. Well, look, that's the start of our debate this week on the future of Irish football. But we've definitely started to scratch the surface of the issue around that pathway for our elite players to make it all the way to the top of the game. And the definition of what the top of the game is continues to be the Premier League. So, and the national team, obviously. But maybe we need to recalibrate that too.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.